Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is Lauf v. McCollum. Ms. Kane. Apparently, you're not Ms. Kane.
Correct. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Kevin Vodak.
When did you inform the Court of the change in argument? Who was going to present?
That was done through the card that we sent in.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. And how do you spell your last name?
V as in Victor. O-D-A-K.
O-E.
O-D-A-K.
A-K. Thank you, Mr. Fuller.
And lead counsel Lisa Kane will be arguing on rebuttal.
All right. Very good.
We come before you this morning seeking review of the district court's opinion granting summary judgment in favor of Chief McCollum on Officer Lauf's violation claim of an equal protection violation. This court must review the district court's decision de novo, examining the record in the light most favorable to Lauf, drawing all reasonable inferences in his favor. As the record reveals, Officer Lauf presents evidence to show that there are genuine issues of material fact.
Counsel, can you tell me how many officers there are in this police department?
I don't recall, Your Honor.
Are we talking about 100, 50, 10?
There are a number. I really cannot specify.
All righty. Well, I'll ask your opponent. Maybe they know.
As the record reveals, Lauf presents evidence to support his claim of denial of equal protection.
What was he seeking in the way of damages? It was just a 30-day suspension, wasn't it?
Well, there was a total of 60 days, actually, Your
60
Honor.
Days?
Because there was 30 days prior to the board's hearing, and then the board imposed 30 days on top of that. Which I would note, Chief McCollum actually sought 60 days total when he was attempting to settle this matter prior to the board.
Yeah, but you didn't answer my question. So what's at stake? 60 days suspension? How much is that?
Well, on top of that, Your Honor, there are... he could seek compensatory and punitive damages
what
based
mean,
on...
He could seek compensatory damages. That's presumably the 60 days, right?
Correct.
Well... How much is that?
I'm not positive on
is
that.
This is some grudge suit of some sort? This is part of their ongoing feud over the union?
That's correct. That's where it stands.
That's correct. Right. It's a grudge suit. Right.
Yes.
Why should we entertain grudge suits?
Because that's been recognized by this
really
court.
Is there a grudge suit jurisprudence? You know, Congress encourages grudge suits.
No, this is pursuant to the
Civil Rights Act, or what?
This is pursuant to the theory of ill will recognized by this court in Esvail v. McCrane, as well as its progeny. We have sufficient evidence here where Chief McCollum acted out of an animus based on Louth's union activity. He specifically, in February of 2000, told Louth that he was going to terminate him after Louth voiced his opinions about the chief's disciplinary procedures at a union meeting. And instead of firing him, he sent him on his way to look at case law that showed how officers can legitimately be terminated. Basically a veiled threat to Lauf. But I think, you know, the real focus here is on the similarly situated individual.
Yeah, but that's weak. That's really weak.
That's only one instance, Your
because,
Honor.
Because... So your principal comparison is with how Miller was treated?
That's correct.
Yeah. But there's a big difference between a child missing person and an adult missing person.
Well, I hesitate to
right? I mean, adults go missing all the time, right? Run away, hiding, running off with someone else and so on. But if a child disappears, of course, that's extremely... of extreme worry to people, and if that's mishandled, a police department can accrue a lot of unfavorable publicity.
But in this case,
I see that they're that similar.
But in this case, Your Honor, we have the exact same departmental rule in violation by both officers who are in the same position, having the same responsibilities. And you know, I would argue that there is a threat to the citizens of the community in the same inaction taken by both supervisory officers. By Miller failing to enter this information into the computer in a timely manner, that missing adult couldn't have been located in other districts. And we have evidence in this case that the child that Louth supposedly was at issue was located in an adjacent police district. And there's another instance where we have disparate treatment of Miller, where McCollum basically gave Miller no discipline for violating a rule based on his failure to report a conversation that Miller had with Louth about this same missing juvenile incident. Just as McCollum brought charges against Louth that included the same violation of a departmental rule, and you know, McCollum brought 76 separate violations against Louth in this hearing.
Is there state law regulating police unions, or is it exempt from the National Labor Relations Act, or what?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Is there some applicable labor law to this business with the police union?
I assume there is.
You don't know, right?
They are a recognized bargaining representative, so they would be subject to the NLRA.
To the federal law or state? Federal labor law or state labor law?
I believe both.
Well, why is this a civil rights case? I mean, you have a...
Because we have...
Why isn't this something to be taken up with the labor authorities?
Because it's beyond the labor relations.
That, look, you've admitted it's a grudge suit. It's a petty little suit. There's no real federal interest here. If McCollum is retaliating against Louth for Louth's union activities, why isn't that a classic subject of concern for federal or state labor regulators?
Because this goes beyond a union issue.
It can go beyond. It's a little petty dispute between these people over whether there's going to be a police union.
No, I disagree, Your Honor. They were already represented by the time that Louth was put
and
before
if
the board.
If you're retaliating against someone because you have a labor dispute, then it goes before the labor board. No, that's an unfair labor practice.
But it goes beyond that, Your Honor. I mean, look at the December 2001 incident where Louth challenges the decision to not be denied a union representative.
Precisely.
It's not that issue in particular. It's McCollum saying, I don't care if your rights are violated. I don't care if the law is on my side, and completely dismissing the matter.
Right. It's a union-busting attitude on McCollum's part, right?
I think it goes beyond that, Your Honor. I think he became a gadfly in the department.
He doesn't want a union, right? That's why he hates Louth.
I think that's part of it, but not completely.
What's the rest of it?
Because he has focused on Louth in particular.
What else does he not like about Louth, besides Louth's involvement with the union?
His voice of opinion on every matter that McCollum has made. I don't think it would satisfy necessarily an unfair labor practice charge here.
Why not?
Because that, I think under those standards, it would require much more. At this point, we request that this court reverse the district court's opinion and remand this case for trial.
Thank you, Mr. Foley.
Thank you.
Mr. Weiler? Mr. Weiler?
May it please the court, counsel. What we have here...
Could you tell me how many officers are in the police department?
Yes, Your Honor. There are approximately 20 officers in the department.
Thank you.
What we have here, to borrow the title of a law review article, is an angry white male who doesn't fit into any protected class, and yet who, in an
attempt... But isn't this a labor dispute?
It absolutely is, and...
Is this union subject to federal labor regulation?
Yes, they're actually in the proper venue, in our view, that Mr. Louth should have chosen was to proceed with his review rights under the Illinois Administrative Review Law, in which he could have appealed the board's decision, but chose not to, and instead...
Does that mean this is subject to state rather than federal labor law?
Well, it's definitely subject to state labor law.
I just don't know whether police unions are subject to National Labor Relations Act.
I know they are subject to the labor provisions under Illinois law. I don't believe they are under
probably
federal law.
Not. They wouldn't, because federal law would be preempted.
So in our view, the correct course, the proper course for Officer Louth to have chosen, if he disagreed with the decision to have brought charges against him by Chief McCollum, was to challenge that decision pursuant to the Illinois Administrative Review Law, in which he had 35 days after the board rendered its decision to do that. One of the arguments that we made, and which was not considered by the court, the district court, because it found in favor of Chief McCollum on other grounds, was that this claim is precluded because of his failure to pursue his rights under the Illinois Administrative Review Law. In this case, in actuality, this lawsuit was filed before Officer Louth had even had his hearing before the board in an attempt, in our belief, to stem or preclude or take as a preemptive strike any attempt to terminate him. He thought, as Officer Jones, the other officer involved in this missing child incident, was terminated, he thought that he too might be terminated. So he filed this lawsuit preemptively before he even had his hearing before the board. And then after the hearing before the board, failed to pursue his appeal rights under the Illinois Administrative Review
Law. He's still a member of the police department there?
He's still a member of the police department. This case was brought as a class of one equal protection claim, and as this court knows, that series of claims was clarified, some would say, by the U.S. Supreme Court in the Olek versus Willowbrook case, which held that in order to prevail, a plaintiff must show that he was intentionally treated differently from others similarly situated, and that there is no rational basis for the difference in treatment. And I recognize that different panels of this circuit disagree to some extent as to whether there must also be evidence of improper motive or subjective ill will. But regardless, Mr. Loss' claim follows under any analysis. This court has determined and held that the individuals to whom the plaintiff compares himself must be prima facie identical in all relevant respects in the Purs versus Winthrop Harbor case. Officer Louth has failed at the very first step. He has completely failed to identify anybody who is prima facie identical in the relevant respects that we're dealing with here. This is evidenced, I think, by viewing the change in comparators between when the case was filed, when Officer Louth argued in response to the motion for summary judgment, and now here on appeal. He's abandoned his attempts to claim similarity with former officers Shadora and Phelan. He's abandoned his attempts to compare himself to other officers, Madler, Yates, Rampa, and Hernandez, whom the district court found there was no competent evidence that they were had any involvement or misconduct.
That's one of the reasons I asked how many officers were in this. So it's hard to find comparable. The smaller the group, the more difficult it is to find somebody.
Well, but in this case, Chief McCollum testified that this was the worst case of neglect of duty that he'd seen since he'd been a chief. You've got two officers here, a supervisor and a line officer, who completely failed to undertake any investigation whatsoever with respect to a mother's complaint that her 11-year-old child was missing. That hadn't happened in LaGrange Park before. And this is the only time Chief McCollum has ever brought charges against any officers, was against Officers Loth and Jones, because of this incident and because it was so serious. And so there is no other case to compare this to. And counsel's Officer Loth's attempt to stretch the boundaries of this case to fit within the class of one dynamic failed for that reason. Because he's trying to claim is only federal, the only way he can in federal court, because he's a white male, not in a protected class, that he must have been subjected to this decision to bring charges against him because of some ill will that Chief McCollum bore against him. And it's simply not there. There are no comparable individuals with whom Officer Loth can compare himself to. And without that, his claim fails at the very first level. You don't need to go beyond that to decide this case. And the district court, decided the case primarily on that basis, that there were no similarly situated or prima facie identical individuals to whom Officer Louth could compare himself, and so he entered summary judgment. The other thing that Officer Louth has failed to do was to demonstrate that the decision to bring charges against Officer Louth had no rational basis. And the law is clear in this circuit that that is, in fact, a requirement. In Bell versus Dupereau, the court held that the plaintiff must eliminate any reasonably conceivable state of facts that could provide a rational basis for the decision. The same was held in Purs versus Village of Winthrop Harbor and Discovery House. The Neville versus Schomburg case has held that ill will must be the sole cause, and that even if there is ill will, if there's a rational basis, it will not condemn the action. Plaintiff has not addressed that issue, or has addressed it by saying that that's not the law in this case, and that he does not have to disprove any or show that there wasn't a rational basis for the decision to bring charges against him. There absolutely was a rational basis to bring charges against him. Chief McCollum is charged with enforcing the rules and regulations of the police department for the Village of LaGrange Park, the laws of the state of Illinois. He's faced with a situation where two of his officers have completely dropped the ball in the handling of this missing child incident, a serious incident, in which the child was found wandering the next morning in a neighboring village. He had every right and would have been derelict in his duty, I believe, had he not brought charges against the officers in this case under these circumstances. He certainly had a rational basis to do so. And if he had a rational basis to do so, even if he may have harbored, and we're not saying that he did in any way, but even if there's an argument to be made that he harbored some ill will for Lost Union activities, there was a rational basis to pursue the course of action that he did choose in this case. And so for that reason as well, summary judgment was properly entered. In addition, as a government actor, Chief McCollum is entitled to qualified immunity. So even if you were to get past the lack of a similarly situated individual and the fact that the plaintiff did not establish that there was no rational basis here, Chief McCollum is still entitled to qualified immunity under these circumstances. The case law recognizes that there doesn't have to be an identical case. That issue was addressed in the Lunini versus Graeb case, decided in 2005. But the court held that the contours of the case must be sufficiently clear that the official would know that his conduct violates that right. And there's nothing here that would in any way put Chief McCollum on notice that by undertaking the decision to bring charges before the Board of Police Commissioners in this case, that he was in any way violating anybody's rights. And for that reason, and those reasons, and the reasons set forth in our brief, Your Honor, we ask that the decision of Judge Duryigian granting summary judgment in favor of Chief McCollum be upheld. Thank you,
Ms. Wiley. Ms. Kane.
Judge, I would like to answer some of the questions that you posed earlier with regard to the difference in a child versus an adult.
Well, before you get to that, with regard to Miller, didn't the district judge say he wasn't going to consider Miller because you hadn't mentioned him in the answer to an interrogatory?
Yes, he did, Your Honor. And frankly, Mr. Louth, when we answered the written discovery submitted by the defendant, Mr. Louth was unaware of Mr. Miller until a month before the discovery closed. It came out in a deposition. And as Mr. Miller had never been previously disciplined for the same infraction pursuant to the Standard Operating Procedures 41.25, it was only learned in the deposition of Mr. Miller and Dragan, who testified to that.
Why was Miller being deposed at all then? I mean,
he was involved in the incident that led to the charges being brought against Mr. Louth, in that Mr. Louth had informed him the day after the May 22nd incident, in which Mr. Jones had not given Mr. Louth full disclosure of all the information. Mr. Miller was the next in charge with regard to receiving any deficiencies, and so Mr. Louth did inform him of that. But most importantly, taking that into consideration, to place the burden on the plaintiff, or actually any party that is not, when you're responding to the written discovery, and you really, in this case, did not have the knowledge, would mean amending after defendants have not been prejudiced in any way. They had the information.
But did you actually challenge his ruling?
I'm sorry, challenge?
The judge's ruling.
On a motion for reconsideration?
No, in your brief.
Actually, what we did say in our brief with regard to the issue of the written interrogatories was that they were aware of, because it was a part of the entire record on the submission with regard to the summary judgment. And that was our statement in that regard.
Was that in your reply brief or your main brief or what?
It was in our first brief, Your Honor, that the entire record should have been viewed in the most favorable light to the non-moving party, and that included the deposition of Miller and of...
But, I mean, did you specifically challenge the judge's ruling about the interrogatory?
I think what we stated in our brief specifically was that the court should not have dismissed the comparative of Sergeant Miller with regard to the incident that was so similar to...
No, I understand. But look, the judge made a procedural ruling
mm-hmm.
about the interrogatory.
Mm-hmm. We did not make an argument of an abuse of discretion with regard, if that's what you're asking me.
Right.
No, we did not. We did not. But the comparative that the judge, I mean, it's rather strict in his view, as this was actually the only reason this issue even came about is because we had made the argument in our response to summary judgment based on Rule 8C that the defendant's arguments that the plaintiff was collaterally estopped or under the theory of res judicata from bringing this cause of action because it had been waived and not incorporated in the response of pleading to the complaint. And in the footnote on the reply by the defendants, it was noted that we didn't add Miller. But the truth of the matter is, Judge, we didn't know until we were in the depositions. And surely the defendants were not prejudiced since they were in control of all of that evidence at the time and that it also came out in Miller's deposition. Chief McCollum was well aware of the fact that at the time that he disciplined, and there's explanations given by the defendant on this, that at the time that he disciplined Officer Louth, that he hadn't done the same with Mr. Miller. It was 41.2.5. And while you had raised the issue earlier this morning with regard to isn't there a big difference between an adult and a child, that being that it's much more extreme with a child, the fact of the matter is the standing operating procedures do not distinguish between those two. And the comparative between Miller and obviously Officer Louth is Officer Louth had the exact same responsibilities as Mr. Miller did. It was the same violation. There was absolutely no discipline rendered against Officer Miller at the same time for violating that procedure. They were both involving similar circumstances. More importantly, the reason that the plaintiff did not identify Miller is because there was no discipline ever issued. And
but
when
do
we
you
did
know whether this police union is regulated by state or federal labor law?
Your Honor, I actually believe that it is regulated by state labor law. I do.
So wouldn't Louth, whatever his name is, wouldn't he have a remedy under state labor law if he's being retaliated against for his union activities?
He may have a remedy under state law, but the fact remains that there is absolutely no exhaustion requirement dictated by Section 1983 under the Equal Protection Clause. And the reason that this, you know, suit was filed was not, as I understand you have earlier said, a grudge suit. This was a very serious issue to Mr. Louth. This was a man who was placed on leave immediately upon learning of the incident, and not charges brought against him.
But what kind of damages can you get for a 60-day suspension?
Well, I think sometimes, and I understand.
And what's his annual salary?
His annual salary is approximately, I believe it's $59,000 a year.
So he's suing for one-sixth of $59,000?
Well, Your Honor, I understand, Judge, I understand what your position is with regard to the economics of this, but there's also the very sense of the law which affords for equitable relief. It's not just a matter of how much money can a plaintiff get. Sometimes the rights of others through constitutional...
This sounds like a garden variety dispute between an employer and an employee or a subordinate and a superior officer.
A garden variety? Not under.
Well, it's a labor dispute. You know, a lot of employers don't like unions. So if an employee helps a union, he's likely to, you know, he's courting retaliation. That's why there are all sorts of remedies for. I don't know why this has to be elevated into a constitutional case. I don't see what the constitutional value at stake is.
Because under the circumstances of this particular action, he was the only, his mistake was not getting all the information that was represented to him by the reporting officer, and his charges were ratcheted up to the level of which the chief was seeking full termination of at that point, a 14-year-old
what
boy.
What do you think would have been, so you must think, obviously, 60 days was too strict. What would be a reasonable penalty? He did, you know, it was an infraction, so what would be a reasonable penalty, in your opinion? 30 days? 7 days?
You know,
how about a letter of reprimand?
I think under the circumstances, a letter of reprimand would have been appropriate. It acknowledges the violation. I think that keeping somebody, because it wasn't just a matter, you are sticking with the point that there is really, the damages here are strictly based on he received the suspension for 30 days when or 60, depending on when he became on unpaid leave of absence. But
I don't understand. Is it 30 or 60?
Well, the village actually approved, reduced the termination charges to a 30-day suspension. But at the time between when the charges were actually filed and when this went to hearing and the suspension was invoked, he was on unpaid leave of absence, which totaled an amount of approximately 60 days of unpaid leave.
Yes, but you're saying that sanction was reduced, so he can only he's only suing for the 30 days missed salary.
Well, no, the sanction, the chief was ratcheting up the charges to seek termination. The village, at the time it went to hearing, made the determination that they would only invoke.
Well, how much has he lost in terms of salary, 1/12 or 1/6 of a year's salary?
Well, Your Honor, I think it would be 1/6 is what the argument would be. But the fact
I don't know, look, it's, yes. This is not an argument. This is a question. How much money did he lose?
I believe we had calculated the actual losses to be approximately $8,000, something like that. And we considered in that calculation the additional monies that he lost during the unpaid leave of absence as well on top of the suspension. Mm-hmm. But I can see that my time...
Let me just ask one question if I could, Ms. King.
Yes.
On the similarly situated issue, assuming because the judge ruled in the alternative, the...
Yes.
Isn't it true that on the list of possible department violations that while we're both talking about missing individuals,
yes,
that Louth had was charged with significantly more department violations than in the Miller situation?
Absolutely. I mean, Judge, it's incredible how many different, I mean, the identical situations between these two people and what transpired with Louth was so severe. And as this court has recognized, I mean, if there is a direct animus which led to these charges being ratcheted up, which we have been stating throughout from the outset of this case, is a hostility based on his union activity. I mean, there's a huge disparity in treatment between what Miller...
Are you suggesting Miller could have been charged with as many of those violations as Louth was?
I do believe so, absolutely. And more importantly, even there's more disparity even again with Miller in 2003, because Chief McCollum did not even write up. He found that Miller had violated hit the standard operating procedure by not bringing to his attention what had transpired between Louth and Jones. He did not write him up, Judge, until in January of 2004 when we were in discovery. He did nothing. Thank you so much. I ask that you return in our favor. Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you, Ms. King. Our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.